ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island-chained nation in the sunny South Pacific. Fukushima irradiated as well as fluoridated, and everybody's got a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb to help the economy. My very special guest today is my good friend and confidant and partner in crimes against scumbaggery, Jonathan Eisen from Uncensored Magazine, uncensored.co.nz. Jonathan, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi, Vinny. We're talking through the American thing now, right? Even though we're only a few miles away from each other?
That's right.
How cool is that?
Well, the further apart we go, the closer it brings us together, it turns out.
Yeah, that sounds very thorough. Okay, cool. Let's get down and dirty.
Indeed. Well, for those who are not aware of who you are, particularly maybe even the American audience, where your magazine hasn't yet attained prominence, would you explain just a little bit about who you are and what it is you do?
Yeah, sure. I'm the editor of Uncensored Magazine. New Zealand and Australia's leading alternative magazine for all sorts of alternative stuff. We're at uncensored.co.nz on the net, and we do have a hard copy edition that we've been publishing since 1995. Our first magazine, the headlines on our first magazine was, of course, 9/11 was an inside job, and we launched that on September 11th here in New Zealand. At that point, the New Zealand's leading newspaper, the New Zealand Herald, editorialized that we should be censored. Well, hello. That actually galvanized me for the next 7 years. That little editorial, and we've been going ever since.
It's funny. You must have laughed your ass off when you heard that when you released Uncensored, there were calls for it to be censored.
Yeah, I thought that was that ranked with among the most pathetic things I've ever seen out of mainstream media here in New Zealand, it made me laugh and cry at the same time. It was an emotional moment, Vinny, I tell you, it was galvanizing, I'll tell you that. You come out with a magazine called Uncensored, and the New Zealand Herald says you should be censored. What do you think? My God. Anyhow, since then we've published about 3,000 pages of some really great stuff that mainstream media likes very much to, or dare I say, loves to ignore or spin, or you know the drill. It's just it's getting sadder and sadder, but not any wiser that I can see. Nevertheless, we do have hope for the ripple effect, and that knowledge and wisdom will eventually prevail. But our philosophy is let knowledge and wisdom prevail in the moment, and the devil take the hindmost, as they say. Let the chips fall where they may. You know, my friend Brian O'Leary used to say, the truth will set you free, he said, and then he would pause for a beat, and then he said, but first it'll piss you off. And that apparently is what's happening around the world these days. But, as I said, hope springs eternal. I'm an Aries, and, very hopeful to the bitter end.
Indeed.
What would you like to get into today, Vinny?
Well, I would say the most poignant issue first would be the upcoming protest outside Auckland Hospital, if you could fill listeners in on that.
Yeah, sure. As your listeners may or may not know, high-dose intravenous vitamin C turns out to be the cure for virtually every viral illness on the planet. All right? Vitamin C was discovered officially in 1937 by a Hungarian chap who won the Nobel Prize. His name was Albert Zenz Gyorgy. For Hungarian-speaking listeners, I do apologize for my abysmal Hungarian accent. But that was him. Albert Zent-Gyorgy. Subsequent to that, there have been numerous very, very well-controlled studies on the efficacy of vitamin C for all sorts of things, including, dare I say, polio. 1948, an MD and researcher by the name of Klenner, K-L-E-N-N-E-R. What was his first name, Kath? Klenner. You remember? Albert? Frederick. Oh, God, she's good. Frederick Klenner starts giving high-dose vitamin C to people coming down with polio. All right? And realizes quickly on that not one of them, not a single case, is getting paralyzed. Well, to his amazement, after he publishes his studies in the Southern Journal of Medicine out of Atlanta, a peer-reviewed, you know, all that sort of carry-on medical journal, Southern Journal of Medicine, Frederick Klenner, vitamin C, polio, you can look it up. He's invited to the to address his findings to the next year's conclave of the American Medical Association. The invitation, needless to say, is rescinded after Jonas Salk and Albert Sabin, who were working on the polio vaccine at the time, spit the dummy. And Klenner's invitation was rescinded. But it was too late because his study was out there. It wasn't too late to suppress the evidence of that particular study on lots and lots of doctors and sell lots and lots of vaccines. By the way, there is a very serious question mark here about whether or not those vaccines actually work. And we can get into that later if you want to. But the fact of the matter is that polio, this viral-induced illness, was stopped in its tracks by high-dose vitamin C. Surprise! And then the study went west, as they say here in New Zealand. It was basically ignored, and when it raised its ugly head, it was disparaged. As you might expect from a medical establishment that is joined at the hip to the pharmaceutical industry, which, of course, as everybody knows, was started by the Rockefellers and the oil industry. In the early part of the 20th century, J.D. Rockefeller, John Rockefeller, made sure that all the medical schools in the United States were carefully and assiduously directed away from natural medicine and homeopathy, and substituted the so-called scientific medicine in their place, which, of course, is drug-based, and created a market for himself, which they continue to do to this very day. Nevertheless, that's a long way around coming to this the protest at the hospital. What we're doing is taking off where Alan Smith, and you can Google him, Alan Smith, vitamin C, A-L-L-A-N. Alan Smith was on death's doorstep. He had swine flu. He had whiteout pneumonia. You can't see his lungs. It was so congested in an X-ray. He had hairy cell leukemia, by the way. And he was on life support. The swine flu had gotten to him so completely that the doctors called the family in and told the family that they were going to pull the plug, that there was no more hope for their father and husband, and that say goodbye to Daddy because he was in a coma, of course, at the time, because we're going to pull the plug on Friday. We have tried everything, they said. Their Alan's brother-in-law said, wait a second, guys, you haven't tried high-dose intravenous vitamin C. And, of course, they rubbished that and said that there was no evidence and, you know, they'd rather kill him than try it and, you know, comments to that effect. And the family went apoplectic and basically forced the hospital into grudgingly, reluctantly, giving the poor man some vitamin C. It wasn't high dose at the time, but you know, they gave this this bullshit that you know, testimony that there was no evidence.
Also, John, we're under FCC regulations, so you have to say the word BS instead.
I can't say bullshit.
No, you couldn't.
I just
say
said
that
it. What are they going to do? Censor me?
Yeah,
all right,
they probably
never mind.
Will. What they will do is they might just sue American Freedom Radio, and then with courts and compliance costs under FCC regulations.
Oh, okay, well, sorry about that. I take it back. I take it back. I'm sorry, FCC. I thought that the word was part of the American lexicography right now. And
indeed.
It is. Look
indeed.
It up in the dictionary.
And I'd like to take these moments to step aside and just tell the FCC,
tell them, if you see Kay, tell her to call me.
Yeah.
May I continue, please?
Go for your life.
Alan Smith, basically, the short end of that particular story is that Alan Smith had his life saved by high-dose intravenous vitamin C. 2 weeks later, he was transferred down to his local hospital. By the way, they kicked up a fuss, too, and refused initially to give him vitamin C, too, because that's the medical paradigm here and in America. And the family had to go get a lawyer, a very, very significant lawyer here in New Zealand, to bite them on the derriere and tell them that if they didn't give Alan Smith vitamin C, she was going to sue their ass back to the Stone Age. So, again, reluctantly, they gave him vitamin C, and a couple of weeks later, he was released from the hospital fit and well. All right? Now, 60 Minutes did a story, and you can have a look at that if you want to, all your listeners out there. And it was carried on Wren's and all sorts of other places. And this story, they did two stories on Alan Smith. Two. It was unprecedented here in New Zealand for 60 to do something like that. And they did. And sure enough, the response on the part of the FDA was to come down heavy on the manufacturer of the infusion, the bags of vitamin C in the saline infusion. And they harassed the hell out of these people and almost put them out of business. I hear that they're back in business now. But that's the response of a federal agency that's deep in the pockets of the pharmaceutical industry. Because at the time, as you probably remember, the big pharma was pushing Tamiflu on everybody who got the flu, even though it was shown not to work and all that sort of stuff, and was even linked to various suicides by various kids who in Japan and elsewhere. But God forbid somebody should get their life saved by intravenous vitamin C. However, and this is rather interesting, the import of this story has gone viral now. And Alan Smith has become a legend in his own time here in New Zealand, and he's going to be leading the protest outside the hospital, asking the question, who the hell are you trying to, who are you indebted to? Your ethics or the pharmaceutical industry here? Why is it? Oh, the head of the intensive care unit was on 60 Minutes at the on that particular segment about Alan Smith, and he opined that Alan Smith, that it was totally coincidental that, you know, they gave Alan vitamin C and he got cured. He said it could well have been, and dig this, Vinny, it could well have been the result of a passing bus outside. That has become legendary in the annals of medicine as the passing bus therapy for swine flu. And
indeed, the Ministry of Health, it looks like, has taken it very seriously, and they're going to be building a new Auckland hospital right near Britomart Central Bus Transfer Centre.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, or redirecting it would be easier just to redirect the buses to go past the hospital.
Oh, yeah, but that would be easier and cheaper, and we both know the Ministry of Health is not famous for either.
Anyhow, Catherine says they are redirecting the buses now to go past Auckland. This is the pathetic excuse that we have here in New Zealand for a medical system. Pathetic. And the word is, and this is corroborated by one or two doctors that I've spoken to, that about 15 people have died since Alan, in one hospital as a result of the lack of attention that the hospital has given to high-dose intravenous vitamin C. And they have died from their flu and died from their viral pneumonia, and it is totally inexcusable, and they continue to do it to this very day, which is why we are staging our little, actually it's a witness outside the hospital, to tell the administrators of this hospital that we know who you're beholden to, and you are pathetic.
And, Indeedy-doody. And that protest will be getting held at midday and will go through till 2 p.m. at the ADHB Auckland City Hospital. That's at 2 Park Road, Grafton, Auckland, New Zealand, around this time tomorrow. So get on down there if you like, and also make sure that you spread around this radio show to let people know about it. We'll be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. There's a lot of beautiful mysteries out there, including the mystery of why in the frack people don't see sense, logic, and facts as sense, logic, and facts, and instead they believe that perception is reality and there is no such thing as objective truth. Unfortunately, it's not the case. My very special guest, Jonathan Eisen from Uncensored Magazine, uncensored.co.nz. Welcome back.
Yeah, hi, Vinny.
Now, we continue on with the Alan Smith story. We have had a decent amount of media coverage. We had Dr. Thomas Levy come here, and we've got those videos online for people to check out if they want to get more information as that, as well as a Facebook event for the protest, intravenous vitamin C protest. If you just search that on Facebook, it should be there, led by Alan Smith. And is there any other elements we would like to go on to? Because we had a discussion yesterday, you and I, about 9/11 and the different postulations and theories and things of that nature. I'd like to swing that way.
Let me connect the dots here. The Alan Smith case represents the suppression of the truth about vitamin C and natural medicine in general, right? The suppression syndrome is rife in a society that is whose overlords, if you will, as you well know, have decreed that we, the useless eaters, to quote Kissinger, don't deserve the truth, wouldn't know what to do if we had it, and anyhow, if we had the truth, that would mean that we lived healthier lives and were more able to, live out our lives in a meaningful way rather than as slaves or consumers. The 9/11, the hijacking of the truth about 9/11 is just part and parcel of this whole suppression syndrome, I think. If you will, there's the holographic theory says anywhere you want in the system, you can take anything, anything at all. And that's a hologram for the whole thing. That is to say, you blow it up and you got the whole thing. And by the way, I think you should have Christopher Ballin on, Vinny. I think that would be a real good idea. Chris wrote a book called Solving 9/11. He's probably the best 9/11 researcher on the planet right now. But the suppression syndrome goes all the way up and down the ladder. And that syndrome, the effects of that syndrome, are to create a society of morons. And I hope nobody takes
they've been
it personally.
They've been successful.
Say what?
They've been successful.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. But not completely, because, the truth will out. And the fact of the matter is that thanks to the Internet and thanks to people like yourself and others, there is a huge awakening going on. And American Freedom Radio is part of that, that fight back, that pushback to help the people, sometimes easily, sometimes with difficulty, move into a space where they can have that aha moment, that eureka, the awakening, if you will, that enables them to actually see the whole picture. And that's all to the good, I think. That's amazing. People might be freaking out because, oh my God, they're, you know, you can live a lie so long your whole life will come out wrong. But and most people at this stage in the game would rather stay asleep. But those numbers are changing, which is, I believe, highly disturbing to what we call the elite, whose whole modus operandi is to keep us, dumb and barefoot and pregnant. Not pregnant these days, right? And we are, as a planet, waking up to the fact that we've all been had for suckers. And when that happens, you get lots of different reactions from lots of different people, which is, I believe, forcing the issue, forcing the elite into a corner, forcing them to either defend the indefensible or actually change their minds and come out and say, hey, wow, were we wrong? And I see, trust me, I see a lot of people now, reluctantly at first, but, and you know them as well as I do, you know, I'm just thinking offhand of Catherine Austin Fitz and a lot of former people in the intel community, as they say, who are freaking out, cops and intelligence agents, and look at Webster Tarpley, for example. There are a lot of people who are getting up on their hind legs as part of this pushback. The hospital protest about vitamin C is just, again, just another hologram here. It's just one tiny little bit of the entire picture, which is basically, I believe, a concerted systemic depopulation agenda.
Mm-hmm. And I'm of the opinion that it all ties in. Like, basically, if you can wake up to one conspiracy, it means you can wake up to all of them. And there are many, and there are many truths. And what I find interesting is some people, instead of wanting to look at all of the various eclectic things and try to get a real picture of what the world really is, how it truly functions, they will instead focus on one individual issue or something of that nature and ignore everything else.
Well, that's okay, because you do one, and pretty soon you're seeing the as we say, the holistic nature of the thing, man. From the banking system to 9/11 to this bogus Israeli thing, it's and by the way, Christopher Bolin has, in his book Solving 9/11, actually solved 9/11. He really did, and this is why he was arrested, beat up, and forced to flee the country. The country being the United States of America, land of the free, home of the brave. Because, the truth will set you free, but first it'll piss you off, and it actually has pissed off a lot of people who have no comeback, factual comeback, to not only his allegations but his evidence. And this is what they do. This is the nature of the fascist game. All right, you cannot abide the truth, and that means it's basically a deathist agenda. And a suicide agenda on the part of the enforcers themselves. I was heartened very much by the sight of the German police putting down their weapons, their carapaces, their helmets, and marching with the protesters a few months ago in Germany, who were protesting the bankster takeover of Europe. And the cops are getting it. And this must make the elite very, very nervous indeed. The fact is that here on the 10th anniversary of September 11th, where people are waking up, even the Americans, thank God, at long last, the elite is getting increasingly nervous, then I am getting increasingly nervous, not that I'm a member of the elite, but because this becomes a time of the unpredictable. And what they have done in the United States and elsewhere is prepare themselves for the awakening, because they knew that the 9/11 story wasn't going to last. They knew that there was going to be an awakening if they weren't able to shut down the net, which they haven't been able to do. And they prepared themselves accordingly. And by accordingly, I'm talking about the concentration camps, this total surveillance society, and all of that stuff. And when the crunch comes, and it looks as if Netanyahu is pushing for that crunch to happen sooner rather than later, then you're going to maybe see another attempt at this shock and awe situation, which by the way was a Nazi term, the shock and awe. I don't remember what it was in German, but the Americans dredged it out and used that expression on Iraq.
Maybe it's a similar principle to Blitzkrieg.
Blitzkrieg, that's right. Yeah, the Blitzkrieg was the shock and awe of 1940, I believe.
The principle behind the Blitzkrieg, Blitz meaning lightning and Krieg meaning war, is that you would come in very, very quickly and hit them with everything you got, and then you'd be moving on while they're still picking up the pieces.
Yeah, yeah.
Conquer large amounts of territory very, very quickly.
Well, yeah, we're still at the reptilian age here, and there are those among us who really are starting to question the possibilities of agendas that are very, very deep and very, very mysterious. But in the 3D world, which is one of the worlds I operate in, the fact seemed to be that the more nervous the controllers get, the more shall I say unpredictable. And the next 100 days or so of 2012 has given a lot of people the fits. And I know some people who are doing a lot of yoga, and I say why, and they say so we can bend over and kiss our ass goodbye. But I say no, nonsense. Do the yoga that is known to be the most powerful, and that is to get into your state of meditation and make it happen, whatever it is that you see happen, make that stop, make the bad stuff stop, and substitute it with the good stuff. And that everything starts on the level of this conscious awareness, as well as the subconscious awareness of who you are, why you're here, and what your mission is. And I think that what we have to do is not only stop the madness, but exemplify the sanity. And that's what I'm trying to do here.
Indeed. And on the 9/11 issue, we had a discussion yesterday, and this is a conclusion that both you and I drew independent of each other, that there are the three working theories, that there's Richard Gage with the controlled demolition, there's Dmitry Khalazov with the nuclear bombs going off, and there's Dr. Judy Wood with the directed energy weapons. And with my research and listening to all three of these theories, it looks like all three of them are correct at the same time, whilst none of them being correct. And so it's my postulation and yours that what they did is used all three so that the 9/11 truth movement would be fractured, and that way anybody who questions my research or my paradigm or my theory or whatever is automatically a paid government agent and what have you. So you get them fighting and infighting over and bickering over the details, and nobody gets arrested, nobody gets exposed, nothing gets done.
I don't think
sure enough. What are we, 11 years on now? Name me one 9/11 terrorist who's actually gone to jail, who actually did it.
I agree with you, but only up to a point. I don't know how deep the planning was about the truth movement and how they would respond. But I do know, and by the way, Dr. Ed Ward, W-A-R-D, was, I think, the first person to expose the seismography that indicated that suitcase nukes were in the basement there of the 1 and 2. And Ward's stuff, I think, was impeccable. But I agree with you very, very profoundly that all three, there was thermite, absolutely. There were nukes, absolutely. And Judy Wood's case, which is very, very interesting, you don't need Judy Wood to actually explain the pulverization and the dust of it. A good nuke or two would do that. But it's a very interesting hypothesis. I have read her book. I have listened to her interviews. And she's a smart cookie. There's another one, though. There's a fourth, which is even more interesting. Not that I want to deflect attention from the three very highly provable theories, except for Woods, which is, you know, it's good, but I don't think it's proven yet. And that was the no planes theory. I think that was thrown in as a red herring to fracture the truth movement. But that said, you know about the no plane theory, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the no plane theory. That said, I am completely flummoxed by some of the stuff I see on the internet
Somebody did a digital F-16 flying into a New York building, and they're like, hey, would you be able to tell the difference if they reported it on the news?
That's right. I've seen that, and it's highly intriguing, but I think it's a diversion. And they had this damn thing planned so well for so long that it gives me pause as to their intelligence, because they left so many clues. I think the first thing they were counting on is the complete and utter control of the media, which they lost in the first day or so after September 11th, and regained only slowly. You know, I'm talking about Dan Rather, and I'm talking about the people at the CNN guys at the Pentagon who were going, where's the wreckage? You know, that kind of stuff. But they actually lost control, and they knew they would lose control because they knew that this stuff would seep out, and that it couldn't last more than, I believe, 2 or 3 years. And indeed, it hasn't. The question becomes now, what the hell are they going to do about it, and how are they going? And the answer is, they are well prepared, as I said before, to...
We're coming to break, John. Do you want to hang on for one more segment?
Suffer the consequences of the awakening.
Indeed. All right, we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Jonathan Eisen, uncensored.co.nz. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live right here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week. If you're in New Zealand at the moment, it's 10 a.m. through midday. When we go through daylight savings, it kind of changes a little, by upwards of 2 hours, in fact. It'll be an afternoon show during the summer. But anyway, I'll see if my guest is still there. John, are you still there?
Are we going up to the hour?
We will. There's only about 10, 12 minutes left in this segment.
Got it,
I know you're a busy man, and I really appreciate you taking the time to come on.
It'll cost you.
Yeah, it always does with you.
Mm-hmm. What do you got?
Right. Well, what I got is the Uncensored Truth. Now, you're the man behind Uncensored Magazine. Also, you're the co-editor, with Catherine Smith on the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine. And you've been in the alternative field for quite some time. You've had some deep experiences that most would never even dream of, including doing two very highly rated shows for 60 Minutes.
Oh, yeah.
I was wondering, if you'd ever divulge something, like what's the cream of the crop, like the ultimate story, some of the best story in your entire life, or some of the most weirdest information? Is there anything that's like so far up there that it even boggles your mind?
Oh, yeah. I found out on one acid trip that I was God.
It'll do that.
Yeah.
Bill Hicks said the same thing.
Did he really? He was God too, huh? What do you know?
Well,
George Carlin,
we all are.
Carlin on the break was pretty good. I found out that I was George Carlin, too.
living what, two simultaneous lives, you know, Dallas Goldbug style?
Yeah. It's one of them holographic things. You don't understand that until you're my age. Maybe. I don't know. But seriously, folks, as they used to say, seriously, folks, no, I can't go back through the tunnels of time and tell you what the best story is that I ever covered or didn't cover or missed out on at the last minute because somebody scooped me. No. But I've had some fun. I started all this this alternative nonsense back when I was I was the editor of the first and biggest student magazine in the United States in 1961. It was called The Activist. I believe I coined the name. That led to a long and checkered career of publishing stuff and getting fired for doing so. The most fun I had in a sort of positive and slash negative way was when I was publishing books for the Auckland Institute of Technology here. I was the editor-in-chief and publisher of ATI, now called Auckland University of Technology. And I did a book, edited and published a book called Suppressed Inventions. The full title was Suppressed Inventions and Other Discoveries. I did it with the first edition with O'Leary, the aforementioned astronaut. Great guy. And the second edition I did for the United States, and that's still available on Amazon.com. It's called Suppressed Inventions and Other Discoveries. And you can still get it for $12. It's been in print for about 10 or 11 years now. And every so often they'll send me a check for a couple hundred bucks. It was published by Viking Penguin, or Penguin Viking or something. And Viking and a penguin, I love that. Good juxtaposition. Anyhow, Suppressed Inventions and Other Discoveries was a seminal book for all this conspiracy stuff. I was, had my pink slip, another pink slip handed to me for doing that book. I had the Good News, Bad News come to me for doing a couple of shows for 60 Minutes here, one on alternative cancer therapies that really worked, and the other was on medical marijuana. And those are the top rated stories they ever did here. And then after that, I was fired. And I got used to it and started Uncensored, which was a magazine I could only fire myself from. And so far, I haven't done that. I came very, very close, though. And then I realized that if I fired myself, I didn't have anybody to take over, so I rescinded the pink slip.
You're kind of like your own teachers union in that way. You just can't get rid of yourself.
Yeah, that's right. Catherine and I started. We realized that there was no decent health magazine in New Zealand. None. Janice Priest had. That was her name, is her name. She did a magazine called Healthy Options, which went down. And we started the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine, which goes from strength to strength, hoping to get it into the United States. But thus far, it's still available only online and as a subscription if you want the hard copy. naturalmedicine.net.nz, as they say. Natural Medicine is a very, very good quarterly journal. Ranks right up there with Uncensored. And Catherine's sitting right here, and maybe if you're nice to me, maybe I can put a good word in for you so she can go on your show.
And here's the thing: you're both there at the same time. I was wondering maybe for the second hour you just pass the phone to Catherine and she does an hour while you're working.
That would be. I could give you a quick teaser, but what are you talking about? Second hour?
Well, there's one more hour of the show to go, my guest today cancelled, so that hour is free too.
Contracted for a half an hour here, you know.
Oh yeah, you were, but here you are for a full hour. So I must be doing something right.
Well, what was I going to do? Hang up on you?
Well, you could.
Okay, bye. I don't know, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock. Talk to Catherine right here and see if you can negotiate something.
Indeed. All right, pop her on.
Hello, Vinny.
Hello, Catherine. Would you like to spend the next hour on radio promoting the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine and talking about stuff that people need to know? Or are you too busy?
When you say it like that, yes, if you like.
Okay. Well, there we go. Problem of my scheduling has been solved. And incidentally, this morning, Kath, I got an email from my guest on today who, through some various snafus and what have you, cancelled off because of somebody who I thought was a friend and wasn't. And today, within the first, I don't know, 30 minutes of me waking up, I have my good friend John Eisen coming on the show. He stays for longer than he had to. And now the fabulous Catherine Smith is also a good friend of mine coming on the show. So I'm intensely grateful for the friendships that I've...
Let's face it.
Well, I don't know, Kath. It's like every day is a lucky day for me because I'm still alive, for one. And secondly, I have so many great relationships with so many talented people that whenever somebody comes out and attacks me once, there's 10 other people who will stand up to help me and or defend me. So I feel in quite a privileged position.
Well, that's lovely. Well, happy to help. What do you want to talk about? Should we talk about a new issue?
Indeed.
Okay. Well, should we talk a little bit more about vitamin C, do you think? Because we've got a lead story on vitamin C for this issue.
Okay, yeah. We're coming to the end of the segment in just a few minutes, so if you'd like to wrap it off with that'd be cool, and then we've got a full other hour to expand on anything else you wish in the new issue.
All right. So when you say just a few minutes, we're talking like 2 or 3 minutes, or we're talking like 4 or 5 minutes?
Two minutes.
Okay. Oh, well, I mean, I probably will continue in the next segment then. Or should we just talk about some of the topics we could talk about and decide on them right now, shall
yeah,
we?
Yeah. Okay, well, we're on air.
Talking about vitamin C being a very good treatment for whooping cough. Carry on the vitamin C theme there for a bit. And we've got other interesting cover stories for this issue. One of them is Bras and the Breast Cancer Cover-Up, written by a medical anthropologist.
That would be Sydney Ross Singer. We had him on the program not too long ago.
Oh, right. So should we talk about that, or should we talk about something different?
Well, all in all, I find when you can talk about anything that you're particularly passionate about, and I insert. You remember Ian R. Crane, for example, who's a good man, and he's also backing the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine in Europe at the moment.
Well, that's right. He's a UK and European publisher and distributor.
Mm-hmm. And so what he did is he created this very professional, spectacular little 40-second advertisement. And every day when I turn the show into the YouTube version with the webcam, I've been inserting that ad for the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine. I don't know if you know that, Kath, but I've been doing it behind the scenes and stuff like that. Because basically,
nice.
I wouldn't get a dime out of it if Ian sold a copy of the magazine. But it's like, you know, at least it might save a few lives here and there.
Mm, mm. Well, that's the main idea, really.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right, Catherine Smith will be my guest for the entirety of the next hour, talking about alternative health, breast cancer and bras, the connection, vitamin C, and any other various eclectic things that she seems to know about. So you're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you quite likely go friggin' nuts. Be right back after the break. The Vinnie Eastwood Show. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the show that you never know what's going to happen. You never know what won't. Because, well, basically, if you want anybody on this show, and I'm serious about this, anybody, you send me their email address and I'll automatically generate an interview request and send it off to them. And if they're happy to come on, they will. And it matters not what they speak of. I'll just listen and agree with them on what I can on. Because it's on the points we agree that we should come together on collaborate. And the points we disagree, we can leave those for another time. Perhaps a time when we've overthrown the New World Order and we're not facing subsequent extermination. Priorities, people. Make friends or make enemies. Make a choice. I choose to make friends. Well, my very good friend, Catherine Smith from the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine, naturalmedicine.net.nz. Catherine, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. Very nice to be here, Vinny.
Okay. Now, a bit of background on yourself for those who are unaware. Just tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is you do.
Okay. Well, very briefly, I've been the assistant editor of Uncensored magazine since its beginning. My husband, Jonathan Eisen, who was your guest in the previous section, is, of course, the founding editor. And about 18 months ago, we had a wonderful idea that we'd double our workload. Not too smart, actually. But basically, New Zealand really did need a magazine that covered the natural medicine issue seriously. There used to be a magazine here called Healthy Options, which ran for over 2 decades, but had stopped being published. And not only was there a need for the general public to have some reliable information about health, because so much of what gets put out here is health information through the mainstream media, and of course our beloved Ministry of Ill Health is potentially fatal if you follow it. But we're sort of facing a number of sort of political challenges on the health front regarding health freedom in New Zealand, just as people are all over the world. And so a Journal of Natural Medicine is very useful in terms of keeping people up to date on those sort of issues as well. So yes, we're on to issue 6 now, and we're generally having fun. We've covered all sorts of issues. We have a regular column on New Zealand's native medicinal herbs because I think it's a very important part of our heritage. We also have people who write for us regularly on all sorts of natural medicine modalities, such as homeopathy and naturopathy. We've had some very good articles by Dr. Ajit, who's one of the best practitioners of Ayurvedic medicine in New Zealand. Also, an article by Rona Wang, who unfortunately is not, well, unfortunately for New Zealand, is not New Zealand at the moment. She's just earned a professorship in traditional Chinese medicine. She's back in China at the moment. She wrote a very good article for us on TCM treatment for endometriosis. So we cover a lot of topics that, you know, of interest to sort of a broad spectrum of people and different modalities, and essentially act as a sort of a clearinghouse for information people won't necessarily find elsewhere unless they've got a lot of time to search the net, which of course many people don't. So, is that sufficient background? I guess just in terms of my other background, I'm also a herbalist, and although I'm not in practice now, I did spend 10 years in part-time practice at the time. I was also homeschooling involved in all sorts of other things. So I've got a clinical background as well as a sort of writing and journalism background, so that is very useful for this job.
And indeed, have you got any products on the market? Didn't you do the cancer prevention handbook?
Yes, I did write that. I wrote that, gosh, I think 10 or 15 years ago now, and I was actually looking at it the other day and realising that there's a problem with the new issue, or the new edition of it. That is that none of the page numbers correspond to what is in the, the table of contents. And I thought, whoops. Overlooked that there. It had to be reset, you see, for a new edition, just because we changed computers over the years and couldn't find the original file and things got corrupted and you know, there's a bit of an oversight in the proofreading process there. It does need significant updating now that I go back to it. I haven't had time to do that. I mean, most of the information there is still sound, you know, it's just that there have been sort of advances in research I wasn't aware of at the time that I wrote it, such as the cancer protective effects of vitamin D, for example, for all sorts of cancers, bowel cancer, breast cancer. I've forgotten the other.
So that's the reason. That's the reason for everybody to get out in the sun when you got the chance.
Well, absolutely. As long as you don't toast yourself to a crisp, and you know, set yourself up for lots of skin cancers. That being said, you know, one of the things we've published, which is of interest to a lot of our readers, because we do have a high rate of skin cancers in Australia and New Zealand, in part because until people got completely sun phobic, we were very sort of outdoors-oriented nation, and before the economy got, you know, crunched the way it was, people actually had enough leisure time to be outside more. And so there's a significant problem with some people, you know, middle-aged and older, getting things like basal cell carcinomas and squamous cell carcinomas from excessive sun exposure. We ran a very interesting article by an Australian naturopath who's written a couple of books on using black salve, which is a traditional topical treatment for skin cancers. And that was in issue one. We've still got some back copies of that available. The naturopath's name is Adrian Jones. He's a very nice man, and he's written a couple of books, such as How Black Salve is Being Used to Treat Skin Cancer in the 21st Century. So we ran this article complete with some pictures of a basal cell carcinoma, and I'm just looking this at the... at the particular issue now, and seeing that basil is misspelled, which probably won't inspire confidence, but you've got, there is a picture record, you know, of the cancer before treatment, you know, the black cell put on, which is literally black, and then the cancer essentially going a nasty brown, thick-looking colour and falling out, and then the scar healing over. It's a very useful treatment. In Australia, the TGA, which is their equivalent of the FDA, has come down hard on black salve because it's become quite popular in Australia. There was the production of a DVD called One Answer to Cancer, which people, I think, can still possibly access through the site oneanswertocancermovie.com. And that DVD essentially presented all sorts of case histories of people who had cured not only skin cancers, you know, with black salve, but other sorts of cancers as well, including a woman who had a large sarcoma in her thigh, who had it successfully treated. Treating, you know, cancers, whether they're small, you know, external sort of carcinomas, you know, such as a basal cell carcinoma, or something large, is not necessarily a do-it-yourself job, I've got to say. These black salves, the traditional the sort of formulae, the main ingredient is a herb called bloodroot, and there's also often in formulae a bit of zinc chloride, which is mildly caustic. And when you put them on a tumour, typically you get quite an inflammatory reaction around the tumour, and it can look like a burn. You can get redness extending on the skin that has not come into contact with the salve, in some cases up to several inches away from the site. So I would caution anybody before putting it on any lesions on the face to be aware of that, and if you can find a health professional who's got experience with it, and or inform yourself as much as possible about the potential extent of reactions, that is a very good thing. I did receive a phone call a few months ago from someone who had a relative put a bit of black salve on what was thought to be a very limited skin cancer on her face, and got in a very extensive inflammatory reaction, which was ended up being treated as a burn. Whether or not it needed that sort of treatment, I don't know, because I never saw any photographs, but you can get quite extreme reactions. Usually, I mean, it's worth going through the process because usually it does get rid of the tumour. They don't usually grow back after the treatment, although sometimes it does need to be repeated. It is quite painful, however. I used it myself to take out a tumour that was... essentially, this is the base of my neck, where you can imagine this a neck sloping down over the shoulder and at the top of the trapezius muscle. And this was a tumour, I don't know what it was because I didn't have it biopsied. It had been growing very slowly in that site for about 10 years, and then it started to feel different. My gut feeling is that it was probably a lipoma, which is a benign fatty tumour, because I'd had other lipomas removed surgically and biopsied, and it had a sort of similar appearance. However, occasionally lipomas will turn into liposarcomas. The chance of it is not great, sort of somewhere around 1% or less, but I didn't like the way this was feeling. And I didn't want to end up in a situation where I had to have, you know, surgical excision, which might damage that trapezius muscle. So I said to myself, okay, I'll do a bit of an experiment. So I got hold of some black salve. This is about a decade ago. I smeared some on the top of my skin, intact skin, over the tumour. It wasn't far beneath the skin surface. And over the course of about 2 or 3 weeks, what happened first is because I put multiple applications on, more than is actually recommended by the manufacturer to get a reaction, I ended up with a bit of necrotic tissue, that literally burned through the epidermis and turned the dermis below into a nasty-smelling necrotic mass. It wasn't too much tissue. It was only about the 3 or 4 millimetres worth that beneath the black crust of the salve that occurred to. And at the same time, I got that inflammatory reaction around the tissue surrounding the part where I popped the salve on. And then, essentially, you start to have a separation between the inflammatory reaction and the tumour itself, a bit like a crater, literally. You can imagine a mouth of a sort of a volcanic crater. That's what happens, and the thing shelled out, and I had this sort of a creamy, sort of fatty-looking, glistening cyst that I chucked into the freezer for later inspection, and popped a sterile pad over the crater it fell out of. It was a significantly deep crater. It would have been probably a good sort of 13 millimetres deep. It's mostly healed up. There is scarring, and I didn't do very much in the aftercare department. It is strongly recommended that after you have a tumour come out with black salve, you do things like use aloe vera several times a day to improve tissue healing. And I didn't bother. I was fed up with the process by that time. And as long as it was gradually healing up, that was fine by me. But I would certainly urge other people, if they want to try that treatment, not to neglect aftercare if they're at all concerned about scarring, because if you do neglect it, certainly you will get some scarring, as I did. I'm not particularly concerned about it. Personally, it's where it's hidden by my hair, but obviously in other sites, it certainly could be well worthwhile taking the time and effort, you know, put a bit of aloe vera gel on it several times a day. If you end up with a very deep cavity after using black salve, and that is quite possible and is not necessarily to be expected. I'll give you an example. A friend of ours, I can't remember whether it was before or after I'd done my tumour. I think it was before. He developed a melanoma on his chest. Now, he diagnosed it himself. He got suspicious of this spot. It was a very, very small spot. If you can imagine your average size sort of freckle. An average size large freckle, let's put it that way. It was certainly no bigger than that. So he popped a little bit of black salve on it, and then, much to his surprise, this tumour started arising from the skin on his chest, and it was well over an inch in diameter, and it just kept coming out. And it was behind the tumour was not just sort of that sort of diameter had some depth to it. The depth would have been a good, I don't know, 12 millimeters perhaps, you know, maybe close to half an inch or not quite. And even more astounding to him, and certainly it was very interesting to look at as well, was this thing had a root. And during this process, he had to take pharmaceutical painkillers because he had these enormously painful sort of burning and sort of drawing and stitching and sort of pulling very sharp pains. What gradually happened over several weeks was that a root, which ended up being sort of like a sort of big sort of fleshy piece of string.
This has been quite the disgusting conversation, Catherine. Thank you. But conveniently it's being interrupted by a break, so we'll get straight back to it while I go throw up in about 4 minutes. The way it's going to be.
We got to change the way we see the problem if we're gonna fix this place. My living soul don't care about the color of your face. Unite and roll, respect our right to live here on the land. It's Tino Ranga, Tina Tonga, we don't own the banks. The parliament does so where'd you rather stand? They paying their bills off your back with hefty tax demands.
Misleading our youth
with alcohol, TV, contraband.
Ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Broadcasting live here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week. Tune in whenever you can. And if you can't tune in live, there's archives, and they're all free. We even have commercial-free archives. If you subscribe, I'll flick you the link. And even if you don't subscribe, if you ask for the link, I'll give it to you. Don't care. Just get the truth out there, for frack's sake. My very special guest is Catherine Smith from the Journal of, the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine. Catherine, welcome back.
Oh, thank you, Vinny. And sorry if I was grossing you out. I've almost finished that part of the story.
Yeah, but look at it this way, Catherine. Mm. The amount of things that disgust me that we discuss on this show every single day, I should be used to it by now.
I suppose that's true. On the other hand, I mean, some people don't like listening to fairly detailed descriptions of pathology and... I was trying to give some detail because I actually personally found it fascinating, but then I am not squeamish. I mean, to wrap up the story, I mean, we were talking about how a friend put a dot of black cell on what looked like a very small freckle, but he suspected was a melanoma. And indeed, that was the case. Out rose a tumour which was about an inch in diameter, and on the tail end of that tumour, literally it was like a tail, I suppose, was a sort of long, fleshy black root that gradually, over several weeks, came out of his chest. And thank goodness that was the end of it. Now, this was an interesting case, in my opinion, because it would have been surgically impossible to get a root. And we're talking that the thing was a good sort of 15 inches, 12 inches. So I'm not too up on inches. A good sort of 25 centimetres, it's probably about 12 inches, I think. Near enough, anyway. And it would have made a heck of a mess of his chest if they had to go in surgically to try and, assuming they could even, image it in the first place, which may have been possible, to try and get it out. And all that he was left in terms of a cosmetic issue after the cells had done its work was a bit of a crater where the that sort of tumour had come out of, and that healed up more or less back to his normal skin level. I think he was careful about putting aloe vera on it. But again, in terms of the significance of this case, you know, not only would surgery not have worked, in my opinion, in terms of cosmetic, you know, a good cosmetic result to get rid of that melanoma, but the root was so long, it's quite possible that if he'd just tried to have that melanoma surgically excised only, some of it could well have been left in his body and would have potentially ended up with metastatic disease if he'd had it treated surgically. So that is a potential benefit for black cell, but also a little bit of a potential hazard from the point of view that in some cases you might have what looks like a very small lesion, you can have a much bigger lesion. So, yes, in this case, he got a very good result. He's alive, he's well, and he avoided surgery, which might have been disfiguring. In another case, with a tumour that looks tiny on the surface and is larger beneath the surface, and you don't necessarily know until you pop on black cells, it's possible, people should always be prepared for this possibility, that they might need some sort of plastic surgery if that were to happen. And the cells removed, quite a large tumour, which, the size had not been anticipated. Anyway, so that's probably about enough about black cells. It's a very interesting product. It's not the only product that you can use to get rid of skin cancers. There's one based on a plant. I've forgotten the Latin name for it. The colloquial name is devil's apple, and that's been used successfully as well. And there's a common garden weed, actually. The sort of popular name for it is radiumwort. It's a milky spurge. I've forgotten the botanical name off the top of my head, but I had somebody call me up who had an outdoors job. He was of middle-aged. He'd managed to get himself sunburned on lots and lots of occasions, enough to get, I can't remember whether it was basal or squamous cell carcinomas, and he was using just the milky sap from this radiumwort to treat them and having them fall off. So it's, interesting the way that sort of nature does supply a remedy. This milky spurge grows virtually everywhere in Auckland. If you've got weeds in your garden, you've probably got a milky spurge, and you can use it to treat warts as well. What I would say, if you're going to try this, is that you need to be careful not to get that sap onto normal skin. It does itch and burn. It does cause a little bit of damage to normal skin. You only want it on suspect areas of skin, and you should probably be prepared for some discomfort from it. I haven't personally used that.
Now, moving on from this discomfort in black self, the bra and breast cancer issue that Sydney Ross Singer came up with, I think, is another important thing. And I remember John and you bought me a slice of pizza down at Sal's on K Road and gave me the latest copy of the magazine.
That's right.
And you guys left before I did, but I talked to the girl behind the counter and stuff like that, and told her about it, and she was like, "Oh my God, you mean I shouldn't be wearing my bra? Thank goodness!"
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I always found bras incredibly uncomfortable, and if it's the only time I wore a bra for any length of time was actually in the early days of when I was breastfeeding, when I had quite engorged breasts, had a fully breastfed baby, and I was prepared to put up with the discomfort of having like that sort of nasty sort of constricting band around my chest, simply because my breasts were uncomfortable because they were engorged with milk. Other than that, in my adult life, I haven't had a bar of bras, to tell you the truth, because I do find them uncomfortable. I'm sure there's probably lots of women out there who don't actually enjoy wearing bras either. They just kind of put up with them because it's kind of what you do. In some cases, especially some sort of customer service jobs, it is not socially acceptable not to wear one. I have actually got a sort of a jump page from Sydney Singer's article on the bras and breast cancer issue to look at what women can do if you have to wear a bra because it's not socially acceptable in your job to go braless, just in terms of what sort of bras to avoid. And the ones that really do need to be avoided the most are ones that are highly structured, like sports bras and underwire bras, And it's very important to have bras fitted properly. You should be able to get a couple of fingers under your cups, under your straps, and under your side panels, because Sydney Singer's hypothesis, and he did quite a lot of research with his wife, and years ago they came to visit New Zealand with their son, who was then, I think, 5 years old, and we had quite a long meeting with them. As I seem to recall, we took children to the zoo, which was good fun, and, you know, the children entertained themselves and each other while, you know, we had to sort of talk about all sorts of things, bras included. And the zoo's put me off here. But, you know, essentially their thesis is that the bra constricts the circulation into the lymphatics, and if the lymphatics are constricted and toxins not able to be to drain out of breast tissue as they are designed to, you get them accumulating. And you get sort of the stage set for, carcinogens retained in breast tissue to exert, a carcinogenic effect, which can increase breast cancer risk. That being said, you know, it's just a hypothesis, and the research that they did, it has some weaknesses. They weren't able to sort of do like a sort of formal case control study where they were able to look at sort of other influences other than bra wearing. Some follow-up research would be very useful in this regard. Unfortunately, it's just a sort of a bit of politically hot potato. You wouldn't think that, like, the bra lobby had a lot of power, but it does. And if you read his article in the new issue, you'll see that one man said, "My wife has breast cancer." He worked, I think, for a major PR company that did sort of charitable projects. You know, he said, "I'm right behind you." And then the next conversation they had, he said, "I've been told that we can't support it because one of our other clients is involved with an intimate apparel group, and we'll lose the contract, you know, for X and Y and Z manufacturers." And so, you know, you wouldn't think that, you know, there's kind of like bra Nazis out there, but they are. And, you know...
In fact, you know, I think Quentin Tarantino should make a film about it called Inglourious Brastards.
Very good. Very good. Yeah.
Catherine, while you've been speaking, I noticed that New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine doesn't have a Facebook group, so I just created one and invited like 100 people. So there you go.
Oh, well, that's very kind of you. You probably really should have asked before you did that. But
yeah, I know, but I can just delete it at any point anyway. So.
Oh, okay, right.
Ask forgiveness rather than permission.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'll talk to John about it. I mean, we had a forum on the website, and then as we sent out the website, then we took it down essentially because we don't have the staff to sort of moderate anything. And that has been our... apart from the fact that we dislike the whole sort of privacy issues associated with Facebook, and the fact that, you know, you sort of sign that contract that sort of gives them, you know, ownership of whatever you post. We're very careful about what we put out there in terms of articles in the journal. And we didn't want sort of something to go potentially out of control in terms of people posting stuff that may be inaccurate, or, you know, acrimonious debates about issues and things like that, when we haven't got the sort of the staff to sort of step in and, resolve potential problems that might arise through the use of social media. So that's why it isn't there.
Well, in that case, I'll moderate it for you. I'm a moderator of a couple of other ones, as far as I know, I'm the only moderator people can communicate with who instantly does whatever they need to. So, yeah, I'll do that for you.
Oh, thank you. Okay. And going back to the bras and breast cancer thing, what they did find in their research was that there were significantly higher, I think it was 99% of the women who they questioned who had breast cancer were wearing their bras more than 12 hours a day. So It was significantly lower. I think it was like 80% or fewer who were wearing their bras less than 12 hours a day in terms of the groups who didn't have breast cancer. So if you're going to wear a bra, one of their recommendations was, you know, put it on as late as possible before you leave for work, if that's what the issue is in terms of your bra wearing. And when you get home, you know, take it off. Your breasts need some time where they're not constricted. Some of the people in the breast cancer group were wearing a bra 24 hours a day. In fact, the incidence of breast cancer in a 24 hours a day bra wearing group was a lot higher than, I can't remember all the details, than those who didn't wear a bra or wore it for fewer hours in the day. I mean, I guess that really goes, I mean, they do discuss other issues in terms of, like, you know, illnesses. You know, they talk about culturogenic illnesses, you know. In the 19th century, of course, we had that corset-wearing phase where people had, you know, women had their waists winched into 18 inches and displacing and, you know, compressing their organs and their abdomen and what have you. And that was incredibly bad for women's health. Plus, of course, you can't breathe deeply if you... winched in like that. Your diaphragm's not going to move properly. And you had all sorts of things like, you know, excessive mortality in childbirth. And, you know, in a lot of cases that would have been because of, you know, birth attendants not actually realising, certainly until the later half of the 19th century, that it's very important to have clean hands and things like that. And mothers getting, you know, infections after birth and dying from puerperal sepsis. I personally wonder about, you know, how efficient is your body going to be in terms of being able to sort of give birth effectively if it's you've always had your organs compressed. It's not going to do good things to the blood supply to your uterus, or it's not going to do good things for your for your digestive system or anything. You know, you need to be in a sort of a good state of health and vitality to go through childbirth. And, you know, it's not...
And we'll talk about...
So what?
Oh, sorry, Catherine, we're coming to break. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Final segment with Catherine Smith coming up.
Alone against your mad, deadly, worldwide, conspiratorial, gangster, computer god communism with wall-to-wall, deadly gangster protection, lifelong sworn conspirators, murder incorporated organized crime, the police and judges, the deadly, sneak-parroting puppet gangsters using all the gangster deadly Frankenstein controls. These hangman rope sneak deadly gangsters, the judges and the police trick.
You listen to the Vinny Eastwood show. The most suicidal 2 hours in talk radio. And it's pretty quick, too. Where the heck do those 2 hours go? So I come to the end of the show, and it's like that part in the movie 2012. It's like, man, I wish we had more time. With my very special guest, Catherine Smith, welcome back.
Oh, thank you, Vinny. Mm-hmm. Yes, what we were talking about.
And we have
about.
one segment to wrap up and talk about whatever you want to talk about and go wherever you want to go.
Okay, well, we were talking about culturogenic disease, really, weren't we? We were talking about, you know, bras being a potential contributor to breast cancer in our time. We just touched on how bad corsets were for people and how they probably, you know, increased mortality in childbirth in the 19th century and probably tuberculosis as well, I might add. And earlier we were talking about... black salve is a treatment for skin cancer, and this is back to our sort of culturogenic theme, or our new theme, I guess it is, for the hour. How we have in Australia their own equivalent of the FDA, the TGA in Australia, essentially trying to stamp out a therapy that is working and helping people. So.
Okay.
That's, you know, that's a bit of a shame, but, I mean, if you're listening to American Freedom Radio, you know that, you know, life isn't a bed of roses, and there are some people who are sort of a lot more concerned with their own career goals than they are about, you know, truth, justice, or the American or Australian way. And the Australian way, you know, used to be about, you know, honouring people who gave things a go, but you know, obviously they've been taken over to a degree by the same sort of parasitic bureaucrats that you know, cause problems all over the world in their different incarnations, regardless of their, you know, nation or accent or whatever. And, you know, we're doing our part here in New Zealand to keep people informed about health issues that are important, to bring people information about preventative health issues so that they can avoid getting seriously ill as much as possible. And if they get sick, you know, we also have information on different modalities that can help them to recover, and it's information they wouldn't necessarily find elsewhere.
Where can people purchase copies of the magazines you publish?
In New Zealand and Australia, we have distribution by Gordon and Gotch, and we're in a lot of bookstores, dairies, all sorts of outlets where you'd usually buy magazines. Plus, we're in about a fifth of the Countdown stores nationwide. We've just gotten into them with issue 6. If your local place doesn't have it, you can get it ordered through Gordon and Gotch, or you can just visit our website, www.naturalmedicine.net.nz, and order your copy or subscription online. Or if you don't have, you know, a credit card or PayPal account, there is a subscribe page on the site which gives you our mailing details, so you can send in a check to the PO box, and our lovely subscription manager Jenny will send you out whatever it is you have ordered. So it's pretty easy to get hold of.
Well, that's handy. And I've found I've heard lots of radio show hosts and authors and things like that do this sort of endeavors, not to make money, but just to save life, essentially. That's what it's really about trying to prevent extermination through the use of information, right? And I've found that it's 99 times out of 100 that person will be contacted in quick succession by somebody whose life they have saved, or a family member, or something of that nature. Has that ever happened to you with this magazine, Catherine?
Not
considering saved. You're only in your sixth issue.
In recent memory, not that we've had someone saved, but I got a very nice letter from somebody 2 days ago because we ran an article about boron deficiency and it's linked to arthritis, and she read it. She was having very bad pain with her shoulders. She's 70, I think, and she got herself a boron supplement, started taking it, and now she's hunky-dory. So that was very gratifying. Years and years ago, I remember someone, you're right, in terms of authors, somebody came up to my husband, John Eisen, when he was giving a public lecture on some topic or other, and said, thanks to your book, Suppressed Inventions and Other Discoveries, my dad's still alive. That book had information about sort of suppressed treatments for cancer, including the Gerson therapy and a herbal remedy called Essiac, E-S-S-I-A-C, which essentially was developed by a nurse called Brene Cassay, C-A-S-S. C-A-I-S-S-E, acute. She was French-Canadian, or at least of French-Canadian extraction. And Essiac is her name spelled backwards. It was essentially an adaptation of an old Ojibwe Native American herbal remedy. And this man who came up to John said, you know, we started my dad on this after he'd been told he was terminally ill, this Essiac tea, and now he's alive and well. So that was lovely. I'm sure there have probably been other ones, but at the moment nothing is actually coming to mind. I'm slightly running on empty. Coming up to 12, and I had an early breakfast, so my brain is starting to tell me it's time for another bit of food.
You know, it's, I had the exact same thing. In fact, during the break, I was off to grab myself a banana. But before we, before I was able to even munch on it, came back from break. I'm pretty starving too. You know, this is another thing. Truth has got to eat. Another thing that I really get irritated with is people who, you know, if you ask for donations or if you are trying to sell a product or anything of that nature, you'll get criticized from a puritanical sect of the truth movement who say you're in it for the money and blah, 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 blah. It's like, I've been wearing hand-me-downs. I've never worn hand-me-downs in my life, okay? I came from a relatively wealthy family. But since becoming a truther, yes, I've been wearing hand-me-downs. So if I'm doing it for the money, I must be pretty freaking stupid.
Well, I mean, we both know there's you know, more important things in the world than money. But yes, I mean, it is very nice if people respond positively to for donations, especially for you and your work, because I know it takes an enormous amount of energy to keep a show going, especially 2 hours worth of content a day. At one point, John had a radio show, and that was just once a week, and that took a lot of organisation. So what you must be doing is massive. Yes, I guess. I mean, we're not asking for donations. We have a product. If people would like to buy the product and support our work, well, that's lovely. And, you know, literally, I mean, we have a product because people are supporting our work. If people weren't buying it, we wouldn't be able to pay the print bill. So we are very grateful for everybody who's, you know, either subscribes or buys copies, because they are, you know, not only helping themselves, but we appreciate that many people are already well informed. And, you know, if they're natural health practitioners with a sort of wide experience, they possibly don't need to buy the magazine, although we do try to, you know, bring, you know, such a diverse range of subjects and a sort of diverse range of modalities that will be of interest to even experienced health professionals. But, you know, we realise that people are simply supporting us in some cases because they're already so well informed, and, you know, by supporting us, they're obviously helping to make the information available to other people who may need it more as well.
And what I like about you and John's style is that you're not, it's like you keep things out, but you don't keep them out because they're a little bit too far fringe and you're afraid of the ramifications. You only keep them out if there ain't factual evidence to really back it up. And if you are putting something in, it's just like, well, this is what some people think. And the lack of censorship in terms of new ideas and what have you is something you should be very proud of yourself of course. And I'm proud of you, you know, even though I had no hand in making that happen. But the other side of it is, we had a question from the listener about the cancer cure with hemp oil and stuff like that. And you've even put that in both magazines, both the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine and Uncensored. So you're all over the place and yet very grounded, and that's an incredible act.
I mean, there's very good evidence for the anti-cancer, you know, effects of hemp oil. And actually, the other day, for as long as we're, you know, I'll just mention, you know, if people are online, there's a wonderful video we saw called Run from the Cure, which is essentially sort of a mini documentary about a guy up in rural Canada. Who had, I think, a relative or a friend who was very ill with cancer. He found out about hemp oil. He decided he might as well grow some medicinal marijuana on his farm, make this stuff up, because his relative really had nothing, or friend had nothing to lose. He was going to die if he didn't get something. You know, something didn't work. So he tried it and he lived, and started treating other people. And, of course, being that he was not in a part of the world where you know, cannabis, indica, or sativa are legal. Eventually, the authorities caught up with them. But it's a particularly interesting example of sort of one person sort of being determined to help, putting their neck on the line to a degree. I don't think he ended up in prison, though, from my recollection of the video, thank goodness.
Well, he's still travelling around, and we've had Rick on the show a couple of times. He's really good. Absolutely, many times. And he's a really, really good dude. He loves me, he loves getting the truth out, and he knows about the pharmaceutical scumbaggery as well, and he doesn't confine his research or his activism just to the cannabis field either. And I think we've got to all work together on this one, and the more we attack each other, the less we accomplish. Thank you, Catherine, for your time.
Thank
and
you
Jonathan
much.
Eisen. and Jonathan Eisen as well in the background there. Uncensored.co.nz and naturalmedicine.net.nz, two of the premier magazines that you'll ever find in New Zealand or Australia or anywhere. See you again sometime, folks.